Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome and thank you for joining the Banca Sistema First Half 2019 Results Conference Call. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Gianluca Garbi, CEO of Banca Sistema. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon to everybody. I'm here with Ilaria Bennati, our CFO, and Carlo Di Piero, our investor-related director. I'm looking at the presentation that is available to all participants through our website. As you can see, we have started this year with a good asset growth, and we were able to confirm this growth also in the second quarter of this year. Based on the latest available information from the Association of Factoring Institution, Banca Sistema now is the first institution in terms of turnover specialized in factoring with the Italian public administration. Looking at slide number 2 that has been distributed, our factoring turnover is up 25% on a year-year basis, which is equal to 1,415 million, also thanks to the tax receivable component. The CQ outstanding exceeds now 751 million and is up 32% on a year-on-year basis. The interest income is equal to 34.4 million and is up 6% on a year-on-year basis, thanks mainly to the asset growth. The cost of funding is lower on a year-on-year basis at 0.8%. In 2018 was 0.9%. The total income is equal to 44.1 million, 87% on a year-on-year basis, driven by higher core business growth. The loan loss provision is equal to 4.8 million, higher on a year-on-year basis, lower on a quarter-on-quarter basis and in line with the last two quarters. The total operating cost is up 14% on a year-on-year basis. This is mainly due to the Atlantide acquisition and merger. The net income is stable on a year-on-year basis and is equal to 11.2 million. In the second half of this year, the net income adjusted due to the one-off component coming from the merger is up 17% on a year-on-year basis, which is equal to 7.6 million versus the 6.5 million of the second half of last year. The term deposit has a very strong growth since the third quarter of last year, in particular from foreign clients. The portfolio of the government bonds is lower compared on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Then maybe a few comments on top that following the decision of the ECB to include the retained securitization when calculating the overall amount that can be borrowed under the new TLTRO 3 operation, we will be able to participate with an overall amount that will significantly exceed the 123 million, which was the level of the TLTRO 2 that we were borrowing so far. This will increase the duration of our wholesale funding and will reduce the cost that we will have expected for the following period in order to get the duration that we were looking for. The 6 million Tier 2 bond that we issue in the second quarter of this year has strengthened our total capital ratio. The Core Tier 1 pro forma is at 12.4%. We put the pro forma as the new CRR2 has been released and published on the European Gazette. Moving to the next slide, number 3, both, as you can see, the factoring and CQ has registered a strong increase on a year-on-year basis, but also on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Our growth in factoring is 25% in terms of turnover. At the end of the first half of the year, the tax receivable now represent 27% of the total outstanding, where in the first quarter of the same of this year, the outstanding was 23% represented by tax receivable. I already mentioned the performance of the CQ segment. Atlantide, that has been merged into Banca Sistema, now represent the origination through the network of 20 agents and 15 intermediaries, and allow us to consolidate our presence in the CQ business. I will leave the floor to Ilaria for the next slide, and then I will pick up again on at the end.
Good afternoon to everybody. Following the slightly new format of slides that we introduced during the last call, in this section I will focus the comments on the main earnings figures and the KPIs. I start from balance sheet on page 4. As you can see from the table, total assets stand now at 3.5 billion and have increased 12% versus 2018 year end. Compared to Q1 19, total assets have, however, decreased despite the growth in the customer loans due to the reduction in the Govies portfolio. Loans at amortized cost are up 14% at almost 2.7 billion. And in particular, factor receivables are up 14% at 1.8 billion, thanks to the turnover originating in the first half, and secure loans are up 15% at 751 million. Govies portfolio has decreased by more than 400 million and is now 790 million with an average duration of 18 months. Intangible assets increase is due to the 2.1 million goodwill originated by the acquisition and merger of Atlantide. Equity investment decrease is due to the sale of the stake in Adibu Finance and ProCredit. Due to customer decrease, quarter on quarter is driven by the reduction in repos, which follow the decrease in the Govies portfolio. And that security increase Q&Q is due to the issuance in May of the Tier 2 for a size of 6 million that Gianluca has already mentioned. We now move on to the next slide to discuss P&L dynamics. The full P&L table, we know that is now reported in the appendix. First half, so we now look at page 5. First half, interest income is up 9% year-on-year, where the growth is driven by the higher contribution of both core business lines, in particular the CQ. Looking at the first table, total interest income is at 48.6 million, with 34 million factoring represents 70% of total interest income. Within the factoring, we have registered a solid contribution by our products, in particular commercial receivables and LPIs from legal action. Within the LPI segment, the one component that has registered the strongest increase year-on-year is extra collections. More in detail, the contribution to P&L of LPI from legal action in first half is equal to 11.9 million, while it was 10.7 million in the first half last year. Of the 11.9 million, accrual accounts for 5.4 million, which is lower year on year, and net extra collections accounts for 6.4 million, which is higher than last year. Extra collections have indeed recovered in the second quarter, and as you can see in the bottom right table, we have collected 9.4 million in Q2 versus the 4.6 million in Q2 last year, and versus 2.7 million in Q1 this year. This quarter has been one of the strongest ones in terms of gross collections, including the contribution of a sale of LPI for an amount of 5.2 million. As a final remark on collections, we continue to experience collection rates above 85%, and also the last sale of LPIs has been executed at a price in line with our collection rates. As a result of the dynamics that I've just described, the adjusted income margin is higher Q&Q, driven by factoring margin. As shown in the table, in the top right table, the margin now sets at 4.7%, while it was 4.4% in Q1. We still experience a year-on-year reduction, mainly driven by factoring slight decrease in margins and the higher weight of CQ on total customer loans. CQ profitability is stable year-on-year and also Q-on-Q. The adjusted margin currently sets in the middle of the range indicated in the business plan, which was 4.4 to 4.9%. Finally, just a comment on the stock of LPI. The stock now stands at 129 million, of which 98 million is relevant for the accrual. Of the 98 million, the amount that has already been accounted for in P&L is 42.3. The 129 million is significantly up from the 119 million in Q1, and this is due to the start of a legal action related to positions versus cities under conservatorship, which we will collect at the end of the conservatorship process. We now move on to comment total income performance on slide 6. Total income at 44.1 million is up 8% year-on-year, where the growth is driven both by higher net interest income and higher net commissions. Breaking down the net interest income, the interest income increase that we have commented on the previous slide has more than compensated higher interest expenses. Interest expenses increase is only driven by higher stock of funding, while the cost of funding at 0.8% is actually slightly lower year-on-year and also versus year-end. Net commissions increase year-on-year is due to higher commission income driven by factoring turnover growth. In Q2 this year, commission income also includes commissions related to the direct origination of the CQ business that Gianluca has mentioned. This explains why the other component of the commission income shown in the bottom right table has registered a big increase. However, a good portion of the CQ commission income is offset by equivalent commission expenses paid to agents, and therefore the net contribution of the CQ commission is not material. Higher commission expenses are due to the strong growth of the foreign funding component, and as we will see more details in the following slides. We now move on to costs on page 7. Operating costs have increased year-on-year by 14%. This significant increase is partly due to the impact of the Atlantide acquisition and merger, and let's see how this breaks down. Personal expenses account for 44% of total costs and are higher year-on-year, also due to the addition of 24 FTEs from Atlantide, which account for 400K of personal expenses. Today, our total headcount has reached 209 units in total. Other costs are higher year-on-year for a few reasons. One-off integration costs for Atlantide merger, which account for 450K. Atlantide also had a negative impact of 500K on other costs in Q2. We also have slightly higher admin expenses, which include a 1.1 million contribution to the National Resolution Fund due to higher legal fees and higher IT expenses. And finally, a higher net provisions for risk and charge related to a tax receivable and to ongoing litigations. So, all in all, Atlantide had accounted for 1.35 million of the operating cost increase, including, of course, the integration cost. Excluding Atlantide, the increase in operating cost would have been 7%, not 14%. So, the 7% is more in line with the growth of the business. So, while Atlantide's contribution to the bottom line is negative in the current quarter due to the lower turnover generation, we expect that to become accretive in the course of 2020, following the growth in the direct origination activity. We now move on to discuss funding. Funding mix continues to be balanced between wholesale and retail. Now retail is 59% and wholesale is 41%. Just a couple of remarks. As already commented, the cost of funding is lower year-on-year at 0.8%. Wholesale quarter-on-quarter decrease is mainly due to the repo decrease related to the reduction of the Gavis portfolio. Term deposit stock has registered a strong increase, and this is probably the most important comment on funding. So the term deposit stock has registered a strong increase during the last four quarters now due to the growth of the foreign component, which at the end of June accounts for 61% of total term deposits. Term deposits in absolute terms have doubled since June last year, growing from 600 million to more than 1.2 billion, and the growth has entirely been abroad. We will increase our focus on domestic retail term deposits going forward. As already anticipated, we have issued a Tier 2 security in May with a coupon of 7% and a maturity of 10 years, which had a positive impact of around 43 basis points on the total capital ratio at the end of June. And finally, as commented earlier on by Gianluca, the recently issued guidelines of the new TLTRO program indicate that we will be able to borrow a much bigger amount than the TLTRO, which we have preliminary estimated to be up to 290 million. We have not yet assessed the full impact on our funding plan related to bond instruments, but we know that the need to tap the market will definitely be smaller in size. We now move on to the next slide to discuss asset quality before handing the floor back to Gianluca. Just a couple of comments. Gross non-performing exposures are substantially stable in the last two quarters. Net bad loan represents now 1.3% of total loans and is lower Q&Q. Unlikely to pay has increased by 15 million, as you can see from the graph, and is mainly related to factoring versus private companies. The reduction in past due has partially compensated the increase in UTPs. And finally, the cost of risk is 38 basis points, which is higher year on year due to more loan loss provisions, which are, as Gianluca mentioned, 4.8 million, but it's down versus Q1, where the cost of risk was 42 basis points.
Okay, so thank you very much. Let's move to the last slide, the slide number 10, very few comments. As you can see here is the regulatory capital. The Core Tier 1 ratio has increased compared to the previous quarter. If you consider the implementation of the new CRR2, the pro forma Core Tier 1 will reach 12.4% and the total capital ratio will be at 15.8% compared to regulatory requirements that are respectively 7.75 and 11.85. I will stop here and now I'm happy to take any question from the floor. Thank you.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. The first question is from Christian Carrese with Intermonte. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. The first question is on net interest income. Usually in the third quarter you do an update on the series. So if you can tell us if you are prepared to do something similar to last year in the third quarter that could boost net interest income. Second, on the agreement on the healthcare, the Roche distribution agreement, let's say, what could be the impact already this year or maybe in next year, both in terms of maybe rather than volumes, in terms of top line contribution. And finally, I saw that you put the pro forma common equity tier 1 ratio equal to 12.4%, still waiting for the final decision by Bank of Italy. So if you can tell us what kind of visibility. I think that by the end of June 2020 they have time to do the approval of the new European regulation. So if you can give us a guidance, when do you expect the final approval to be done? Thank you.
Okay, I start in reverse in terms of pro forma. Actually, it's June 2021 when, if nothing will change, this will be entering into force. We don't have any visibility about Bank of Italy decision, but as this is not conditional to anything, we will continue to report the pro forma together with the regulatory part, because is going to be automatic the increase if nothing will happen at the level of the domestic regulator. In terms of ROSH impact, today we have in terms of outstanding in terms of turnover, since we started, they represent under 80 million more or less the turnover. We haven't assessed yet what is going to be the impact. We have to see more in detail the portfolio and the kind of portfolio, in the sense that some of the receivable are paid on time, so there's not any accrual of penalty interest. Other receivable are paying with delay, but to understand how long is going to be the delay, we need to wait a little bit to see when these people will, when the obligor will start to pay, and at that point assess better based on the actual expected collection date what are the accrued late payment interest. So it's a bit too early to give an estimate based on this type of portfolio. Maybe Ilaria can comment on the first question.
Yes, we will definitely update the statistical model at the basis of our accounting model for LPI in Q3. We will update two components. One is the accrual rate, and the other one is the time value. And the updates will be based on our backtesting performed in the last 12 months up to June 2019. So we do not have the results of our backtesting yet. So we are not able to, we haven't even internally assessed the impact of the change, the update of the model. I just remember you that the current average accrual rate is 52%. This is the average accrual rate based on the portfolio composition between of us, healthcare and non-healthcare. And the current time value is around 4 years, actually a bit lower and a bit higher, distinguishing between healthcare and non-healthcare. We will fine-tune these values based, as I said, on the most recently available data. On that basis, we'll adjust the accrual amount in the balance sheet. We expect the effect to be positive, but we haven't estimated it yet.
The only thing that I can add is in the monthly backtesting that we keep doing every month, the result so far has been accretive compared to what was the current level of percentage. So we have to wait for the last few data, and in September we will do the usual adjustment. So there will be, as you said in your question, a boost. How much is going to be is a bit, we are unable to answer at this stage.
Thank you.
The next question is from Mattia Steig with Rothorn Partners. Please go ahead.
Hello, thanks for taking my question. Actually, I have two. The first refers to page 3, the pie chart by obligor PA accounts for 83% and the 17% corporate. Maybe you can tell us a bit more what's actually behind corporate and what are the risks associated with that segment. And then my second question is about net impairments, which were up compared to last year, and also the LPI non-relevant for accrual, which stood at 31 million compared to 19 million at the end of Q1. maybe you can explain a bit more why those numbers went up. Thank you.
Okay, so I will answer to the first question. In the pie here, we represent based on regulatory definition. So corporate for us is a limited liability company, even when this limited liability company is fully owned by public administration. So in this segment, you may include the company that are fully owned by some public entity. You may also include the obligor that are related to the football, where the obligor is the league, which is technically speaking is a private entity, even though there is a public interest on the back of it. So the vast majority of the segment corporate is legally is a corporate, but actually is in line with the public sector risk because very often they are owned by public authority. On the second question, I leave
On loan loss provisions, as you rightly noted, the loan loss provisions have increased compared to last year, and that has occurred both in Q1 and in Q2, although this was a continuation of a trend that actually started at year-end. The increase in Q1, was almost totally related to factoring, which is the case as well in Q2. And in Q1 was mainly due to provisions related to new municipalities that have entered into financial distress, so the conservatorship process, and also to public consortia that have been moved to the UTP bucket due to the lengthening of the expected collection. There is not a single exposure that caused the loan loss provisions to increase, but it's more the result of several different exposures. Just a reminder, the exposure versus cities in conservatorship is not a concern because, as we all know, and as we have already highlighted many times, a public administration entity cannot default, and so as long as you do not accept any haircut proposal, which is put forward by the commissioner, we will be able to recover at the end of the financial distress both capital and interest. There is therefore only a time value effect due to the lengthening of the collection process, which is reflected in the provisions that we prudentially set aside. Again, in relation to the loan provisions in Q1, as I mentioned, the other portion of provisions were related to public consortia. These positions do not represent a concern either because most of these entities are public interest entities where the stakeholders are cities, and also in most cases there are preconditions in the agreement to give the credits back to the original sellers that in most cases have a better credit standing than the consortia. So the likelihood to recover the capital is pretty high. As we said, we prudentially set aside some provisions in accordance with the coverage ratio of the UTP bucket. The increasing provisions in Q2 are again almost fully related to factoring and specifically to factoring related to exposures versus private companies. Again, the increase in provisions reflects the increase in the amount of UTP that I have commented during my speech.
Maybe a second part of this second question was relating to why the increase of LPI that are not for accrual. When a city enter into this distress situation, while we know that at the end of the process, the city will have to pay 100% of the capital plus 100% of the LPI that had continued to accrue over the period of time, due to regulatory indication by the regulator, if the credit is accounted as an unlikely to pay, we cannot take accrual on LPI. And that is simply because the regulation was written not thinking about public administration, but is a general regulation which makes sense if you have a credit that is an unlikely to pay, is quite unusual that you will make an accrual of penalty interest. And that makes sense if you have in mind any private entity. If you have a corporate that is unlikely to pay, you are lucky if you collect the capital, so certainly you are not going to take accrual on penalty interest. But when we talk about public administration, the city that enters into distress, we will collect both the capital and the LPI. But because the rules said that we cannot take any accrual, we are unable to take accrual on this component. So these 31 million that you mentioned that are not for accrual are related to this situation.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
The next question is from Luigi Tramontana with Banca Akros. Please go ahead.
Yes, just a question left on capital. Clearly, the 20 bps improvement in common equity in the last quarter is a positive, and I understand that the higher proportion of tax credits had an important effect on lowering the risk weighting of your factoring loans. So we'd like to understand how you see it evolving in the coming quarters. I think this is in line with your plan targets. Thanks.
Clearly, you have two different effects. One is that as much as we increase on a relative basis the tax credit, as better will be the core tier one from a regulatory standpoint. But the negative effect is that as much as we grow on the CQ, based on the pre-CRR, new CRR directive, as the CQ is 75% of RWA, this will have a negative impact on the core tier one. So looking at the core tier one without the change of the directive, we will continue to see this effect. On one end, we continue to see the CQ growing, also in relative term versus the factoring, and therefore a consumption of the capital, even though we know that this capital consumption is only temporary, because as soon as the directive will enter into force, there will be a relief. If you remember in the previous period, year-end, the impact on the directive will have released under 40 basis points. Now the relief is under 60 basis points. So there is this positive effect. Then in terms of tax credit, we continue to see a flow of business that clearly will continue also in the next period. I think that on the Q3 probably we will see an increase in relative term of the tax credit versus the total amount of factoring, while on the Q4 we will see the opposite, not because the tax credit are decreasing, but because, as you know, at year end, in December in particular, we may see some transactions that are coming from the market, from large institutions that they would like to get rid of receivable in order to improve their net financial position. Therefore, if the nominal will grow, total turnover of factoring will grow, In relative term, the tax credit will decrease. So my personal expectation is to see the tax credit in Q3 that in relative term will go up, and the tax credit in Q4 that in relative term will go down, mainly because of the denominator.
Okay, many thanks.
Excuse me, there is a follow-up question from Matthias Teig with Rothorn Partners. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to ask about the Gabi's portfolio. If I remember correctly, in Q1 you increased it quite a bit, and now it's been reduced. Can you please explain what the rationale behind that is? I thought you earned a nice spread between repo funding and the yield on the short duration Gabi's, but why have you reduced it now?
So just to make sure we got it correctly, your question is why we have decided to reduce the size of the Gavis portfolio from Q1 to Q2. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So there isn't a specific reason regarding a change in our market view. We simply decided to exploit one of market opportunities and sell the portion of the portfolio which had a positive mark-to-market. So we have a buffer around which we can move around in terms of overall size of the portfolio. As you correctly said, the portfolio was reduced by 400 million, so we are now below our maximum target, our maximum ceiling, which means that if we see future opportunities in the market, we will capture them, always following the strict criteria that have been set by our board of directors in terms of average duration. So there is nothing more than that.
So the government bond portfolio remain a short-dated portfolio, so we decrease depending on the opportunity that we see. We saw the opportunity to sell, we sold. As you see in the next couple of days, the spread has been widened. So we may see whether there could be opportunity to increase back the portfolio up to the maximum amount that our board set as in our plan.
And what is the maximum amount that has been set by the board?
It's 1.3 billion.
So I just looked up Q1, you were at 1.2, so you reduced it, also you were not at the ceiling yet.
Yeah, we were close to the ceiling, not there yet, yes, correct.
We always tend to remain below the top, the maximum amount.
Mm-hmm. Okay, are there still opportunities for sort of arbitrage in that segment?
Well, really, with T-bills, there's not much arbitrage opportunity. The only arbitrage is the carry trade because the repo rate is minus 40 basis points. So you refinance position where the average yield nowadays did become back slightly positive, and therefore there is a 50 basis point carry trade from a government bond position without taking duration risk, because clearly one of our aim is not to take duration risk. Arbitrage with longer duration will expose the bank towards mark-to-market volatility, and as you can read from the press, clearly the country remain with very high volatility due to the continuous political debate battle among the two political parties that are currently governing the country. That creates a lot of volatility in the longest part of the curve, so no interest from Banca Sistema to exploit any of this risk.
Okay, understood. But in this carry trade, as long as the duration is matched, you expect to continue to be active up to the ceiling?
Yes.
Of 1.3 billion?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
There are no more questions registered at this time.
Okay, so thank you everybody for listening, and for the one that has to take will take some day off, also happy holidays.